Welcome back to Athens Happens. I'm Aidan McDougall, digital content producer for The New Political. Athens Happens is a podcast brought to you by The New Political, a student publication dedicated to explaining the nuances of Ohio University, Athens, and state politics. You can find new episodes at thenewpolitical.com or wherever else podcasts can be downloaded. Earlier this year, we discussed Ohio Senate Bill 83, a controversial bill that was introduced in the Ohio Senate on March 14th by Senator Jerry Serino, a Republican from Ohio's 18th district. The bill is titled as the Ohio Higher Education Enhancement Act, and after much deliberation from proponents and opponents of this bill, it passed the Ohio Senate on May 17th by a vote of 21-10, moving it to the Ohio House under the Higher Education Committee and deemed House Bill 151. So today, I am here with Ohio University graduate student Haley Gifford to discuss this bill. Hi, Haley.
Hi, Aidan.
Welcome back to Athens Happens. And if you could, please tell us a little bit about yourself.
It's good to be back. My name is Haley Gifford. I'm a second year master's student in our environmental studies program at the Voinovich School of Public Leadership, where I focus on environmental racism, specifically in our national parks. And I'm also the president of the ACLU campus action team here at Ohio University.
So what I kind of want to start with today is just a refresher on the bill, because I know we talked about it last academic year and you were here for that, but you were talking in your own individual capacity then, but now you're kind of talking in the capacity of ACLU Ohio University Campus Action Team president, correct?
Yeah, that was a mouthful, but yes.
It was. So what I'm kind of going to start with is just general timeline for what's happened so far compared to what we talked about last time. Because when we talked about it last time, it was introduced, but it hasn't, but by that time it hasn't passed the Senate. So, like I said before, it was introduced on March 14th by Senator Jerry Serino. And then on March 21st, it was referred to the Workforce and Higher Education Committee. And then on April 28th, here at Ohio University, the ACLU Campus Action Team created a petition against SB 83, which received so far 205 signatures from students, and it included faculty and staff on top of that. On May 17th, the SB 83 passed the Ohio Senate and moved to the House. And then on May 18th, Ohio University made a statement on SB 83, which included a letter to Senator Serino in conjunction with the Inter-University Council of Ohio, in which they voiced their concerns about SB 83 and now House Bill 151.
It was just, it's just like a little thing to add to the petition part, is that we have like alumni, parents, faculty, staff, students, like literally anybody that is concerned about this bill signing it. So if you're kind of involved at OU, but not really, like if you're a parent or a sibling or something, still sign it.
So like I said before, we're just going to run through like a little refresher on the bill, because it's been a while since we talked about it and discussed on this podcast. And that all happened in the 2022-23 academic year. Now we're in the 2023-24 academic year. So I know it's been a while since some people have heard about this bill and what it means. So Haley, if you could just give like a broad overview on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so Senate Bill 83 directly attacks higher education in Ohio, and it targets things like striking for faculty and staff, diversity, equity, and inclusion training, relationships with China, and freedom of speech issues as well.
So I guess with that, I'll kind of go into like the first question I have, which is kind of what we discussed last year, but to bring it up again, since it has passed the Senate and it has had a couple revisions since, what are your thoughts on the bill in general compared to how it was before, or just how it is overall?
So the bill still stinks overall. I think that's a given. The changes that they're making are small, minuscule, I think. Some of the changes are they're changing the strike provision to just include faculty, which is still really bad. To ban somebody from striking at all is an attack on labor rights on everybody. So I think even the proposed changes he's making are still, they're not changing the foundation of the bill at all, and what the bill is targeting. It's not changing any of that.
So yeah, I think like the changes made to the bill haven't been anything major. Like you said, they're all just minuscule, but it still is a destructive bill to so many forms of culture and diversity and freedom of education in itself, because the things that it requires for anyone to receive now just an undergraduate bachelor's degree, because one of the revisions changed from requiring history courses for bachelor's and associates to now it is just getting a bachelor's. But again, like I've said before, I think that that idea doesn't help anyone who's in like the college of in a college of engineering here at OU or the College of Fine Arts here. It's just kind of making people learn a broad sense of U.S. government to where I don't know what it's really trying to do, and if it's trying to change minds in a way of like, you're learning government now, you should follow it more. And I feel like most people here on Ohio University campus understand what's going on politically. If you're challenging what this bill wants to challenge under controversial concepts or certain ideologies that it wants to attack, it's so many universities study liberal arts and you can't step away from that because it's just a freedom of education and the freedom to expand your knowledge in the way that you interpret it. I haven't really seen anyone come to a university yet, specifically Ohio University, come in with one political ideology, go through a couple classes, and then entirely change their mind. I haven't seen that happen. I'm only a second year, but from what I've seen so far, it just hasn't changed.
Something that I do think would be helpful was I have a list of the changes to the bill. So kind of what's new and what stayed the same, if we want to go over those.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so I think the biggest change is that the bill doesn't apply to private institutions anymore. The section that bans mandatory diversity, equity, and inclusion training now allows exceptions, but they have to go through the chancellor and be required for compliance with federal law, licensure, accreditation, grants, or cooperative agreements. This is a funny change. The bill clarifies now that Chinese students are still allowed to attend Ohio institutions.
Yes, it does.
And says that they are allowed to pay tuition and fees to Ohio institutions, because before it just banned all, it just said ban our relationships with China and Chinese institutions. So there was some kind of confusion there, or uncertainty of whether or not we were going to allow Chinese foreign exchange students into Ohio universities.
And also to add on top of that, it's still quotes Chinese universities as Confucius institutions due to relations with the Chinese Communist Party.
It does. And it also states that we have to have safeguard requirements that have to be met. And then approval, again, has to be, there must be approval from the chancellor and the attorney general.
Well, yeah. So circling back to like no diversity, equity, inclusion stuff, it's just that institutions may not require mandatory DEI programs or training. And now those exceptions are in there. Previously they weren't, but those exceptions must be approved by the chancellor and are required to be compliant with federal law, licensure, accreditation, grants, or cooperative agreements.
What does that even mean?
Yeah, so they put the exceptions in there because for a lot of research, to get approved for federal grants and federal loans, you have to have some diversity, equity, and inclusion training. So even if they ban it in Ohio, we still have to, you still need it to apply for federal money, basically. So that's why they added the exception in there.
So along with like the no litmus test, which I'm pretty sure is not a thing that happens anyway for Ohio University itself, or maybe majority of other campuses or universities in Ohio, but it also removes any professor coming to a university who, let's say, is going to teach under like an African American studies program, which is what we have at OU, cannot submit a diversity statement that would state why they would be qualified for said position to teach that like group of study, which I think is so weird to not have.
Yeah, especially because it's relevant to especially a lot of humanities courses. I like that they're requiring syllabi to be posted 3 clicks away from the homepage with professional qualifications of the professor for each syllabi. I think that's crazy. I just attended a talk by our Constitution Day speaker, Nick Tepp, where he talked about book banning, and the way that he described it was when parents were concerned about what their students were reading, they would be the one to report that to either the state, the university, whatever. So I'm thinking if our syllabi are posted, on our homepage, and I'm taking a course in, anything social justice related, and my Republican father, hypothetically, looks at that and sees that I'm learning whatever, calls in complaints to university, reports that to whoever. Like, I don't know, it feels sticky to me.
I think for me, on the other side of how I'm here at Ohio University and the way that I am seeking my own education is in my own fully individual capability, to where my tuition is not paid by my parents. My tuition is paid by me entirely. I applied to this university by myself, fully first generation college student in the way that I am. But for me, I don't get how, as all of us, most of us, there's probably a handful, but majority of college students are adults who can make their own decisions into what they want to learn, that if they're they're posted on like the university's homepage into professors, who they are, what they teach, is something you can already look up now on a very easy level. But to be within three clicks and to see a professor's ideology in a way just feels weird. Because then I feel like that's just like an invasion on so many things, like you said before. But it's not, I don't know. I feel like if a parent sees it and their adult child is choosing to be in that class, is a whole different story.
I agree, but I'm also coming from a place of a lot of people's parents do pay their tuition. Like, a lot of people's parents do have a say in their education, even as adults. And so that worries me a little bit. Like, I feel like higher education and students are already going to be so impacted by this that is just like one more, it's like the cherry on top almost, to be like, we're gutting your education completely, and even more so, maybe the things that you are excited to learn about and enjoy learning about are going to be blasted for your parents or whoever to see and complain about.
So another big portion within this bill, which is kind of snuck in towards the end, is the fact that it bans form of collective striking and bargaining for not just higher education employees, but for, on the broader side, it affects a handful of other public employees. What do you think about that?
Yeah, like I said earlier, banning or trying to ban striking for any group of people is an attack on labor rights for all people. That just opens the door for bans for striking, period. And Jerry Serino's reasoning for adding this into the bill is one time, but a while ago, there was a university in Ohio. It's not like one of the big ones. I can't remember off the top of my head. But the employees went on strike for 3 weeks. And so the university was shut down for 3 weeks because they couldn't agree on pay and healthcare. And so his argument there is that when you pay your tuition, you are essentially signing a contract with the university as an institution, and nothing should break that contract, is his reasoning. And I think that's a load of doo-doo, because being able to negotiate for your labor rights, for your pay, for your health care, those are things that are important to not only faculty, but to students as well. And I feel like a majority of students would agree with that. If you are not being paid adequately for your work, you deserve to strike. That is your right. And like I said earlier, like, coming after one group of people, even if you specify it is just this one group of people, it is just faculty at universities in Ohio, higher education, does not matter. Not at all. It is still a violation of those people's rights. And it needs to be shut down. It's stupid.
Do you think it'll pass the House and then get signed into law by DeWine?
I do think it'll pass the House. And I think whether or not DeWine wants to sign it or not doesn't matter, because we have a supermajority right now. And they can override his veto if he vetoes it.
That is true. But do you think there'll be more like delegation between this while it's in the House and more debates included?
I think so. I hope so, at least. I'm not sure. I'm not confident that much will change, if anything. I think the point that Republicans are at right now is they're very clearly pushing their own agenda. I don't know what constituent they think they're serving through this bill, because it's not Ohio students, it's not Ohio faculty in higher education, it's not employed by an institution of higher education, which I think just makes this even worse. So I don't think really any debates or testimony is going to change the minds of these Republicans who are sponsoring this bill and who are pushing this bill.
as destructive as this bill is, and how, like you just said, I don't know who this is helping, what constituents this is helping, but like I think we said last year, is the attacks that this education or this bill has on education is going to pander to a political ideology and political affiliation that would lead to a lack of education. And I think that is what this bill would do, is it's just going to build that constituency of Republican as to not having more educated people in Ohio, because it's going to deter so many people with everything that it's going to do and everything that it has.
No, I agree. And in such a backwards way, it limits freedom of speech so aggressively that really only one ideology is going to come out of that. The bill itself was proposed, quote unquote, to promote freedom of speech, but the language that they use is so vague and so unstructured that it will be used as like a, I don't even know, like saying like, we can't talk about controversial topics, or we have to show both sides of controversial topics. A lot of controversial topics right now are like climate change, which is science. There are no two sides to that. There is one side, and that is that climate change is real and it's destructive and it's burning the planet. To sit in a class, actually, I have a quote about this. Jerry Serino was asked by a group of Jewish activists if he believed that sitting in a class where the professor had to facilitate a talk over the Holocaust, if he believed that it would be a step back to listen to those people argue whether or not the Holocaust happened. And he is on record saying, I do not think that that would be a step back in higher education. Stuff like that is just absolutely insane. It is going to drive away so many people from Ohio universities. In general, it's going to be a huge hit to the economy. I'm not an economy person. I really don't understand it, but I do know that the amount of faculty and staff that are about to leave Ohio institutions and the students that are going to follow them is going to be astronomical. I think this would be a good thing to talk about in the bill. We talk about some of these like very open and vague concepts, and so they talk about intellectual diversity, controversial beliefs or policies, specified concepts, and specified ideology a lot. And I have some definitions for those that they kind of laid out in the second round of this bill. And so intellectual diversity, they talk about multiple divergent and opposing perspectives on an extensive range of public policy issues widely discussed and debated in society at large, especially those perspectives that reflect the range of American opinion but which are poorly represented on campus. So when they're trying to promote intellectual diversity, they're trying to promote Republican ideals.
So you're cutting out all political debate on any political issue on campus by professors, I'm assuming, and faculty, administrators, staff, all of that. But does that leave it open to students to debate that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's so, my problem here is a lot of ideals that are being squashed on campuses are those like the Holocaust being debated, if it was real or not. Things like if racism exists or not, things like if climate change is real or not. Those are things that they explicitly lay out in controversial beliefs or policies that they think that those issues should have like ground to stand on in a classroom, which I vehemently oppose. And let's see, the controversial beliefs and policies part. Any belief or policy that is the subject of political controversy, including issues like climate change, electoral politics, foreign policy, diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, immigration policy, marriage, and abortion.
We have classes here at Ohio University on climate change, on sexuality, on
social justice.
Well, okay, but why would marriage itself be controversial?
I'm assuming because people don't want to see a man marry a man or a woman marry a woman, and they want to talk about how marriage should be between man and woman.
But then in the same context, would you not be able to talk about marriage with a man and a woman then?
So they're saying for controversial beliefs, they believe that both sides should have equal ground. So if I'm saying, I think marriage should be between a man and a woman, and you're saying, that's just not true, marriage should be between anybody who loves each other, we get equal standing in a classroom, and the professor can't say, well, actually, Haley, you're wrong, and that is homophobic and awful for you to say. They're going to have to say, Haley, thanks for sharing your opinion on that. This is not my opinion, by the way. I want to make that very clear. I just didn't want to put that on Aiden. It's just an example. But our professor would have to, you know, give us each equal standing on that, even though one of those views is really, in my opinion, awful.
But with the 4 years that you've been here, have you ever seen a professor who has been like that?
Honestly, so this is my fifth year, and I am in a class right now where the professor has to really facilitate and work around some really hard topics from people who are outside of Western culture. And it is a lot different there, but there are some topics. We're talking about gender. And so in class, I have heard people say things like, well, you know, women cook and have babies and, you know, support their husband, and the husband pays for everything, and that's all he needs to do, and that's all he should have to do, which obviously is not how a lot of people think now in Western culture. And so I have been in that situation where a professor has to kind of wiggle around that and kind of bring it back to like, well, what we were reading about actually says this, 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 and this, like not necessarily saying, you know, you're wrong in what you're saying, but based on, you know, the readings, the videos, and all the things that we have talked about thus far, like the assumption would be that no, women don't have to have babies and cook and clean and take care of the husband and all of that.
So that's with discussion and course material, but not having a professor by themselves just shutting down a conversation and being, no, you're entirely wrong, but hearing the person out and then guiding them towards what the course material was.
Absolutely. I've never had a professor like look at somebody and be like, actually, you are just dead wrong. Because a lot of the times it is really nuanced. Like, at least in the classes I've taken, like it's been people from different countries, different backgrounds, like so many things, complex things in their life that are leading them to whatever they're saying. And so I think professors are like really attuned to that, like especially seasoned professors, like they know how to facilitate a conversation. It's their job. So I think that's part of why this bill is so ridiculous. It's like these people, this is what these people are trained for. It's what they've been working for their whole life. Like they know how to have a conversation in a classroom between students and facilitate, and on one end not have somebody saying racist, homophobic, violent things, but also being able to acknowledge that that is a perspective that somebody might have. Like what you said, like guiding them back to the reading, or, you know, back to what I was saying before, like this is how I'm going to connect, you know, kind of where you're coming from at the very base of the idea and what I'm talking about right now. It's never been something like, you're wrong and you're stupid for saying that and you should be a liberal because that's the right thing to do. Like, it's not, that's not happening.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I haven't seen that happen yet.
No.
I've seen people say some off-topic statements and things that I personally don't agree with, but I've never seen a professor shut someone down and be, no, you're wrong. But they will just hear them out and then discuss further of their thoughts and then what course material is and everything about all that.
Yeah, and I mean, I've taken some really, like, some really divisive courses. Like, I took American Whiteness, which was a class where we, like, dissected being white as an identity and how structurally damaging it is to, you know, society. And even then, like, we had some really difficult conversations and my professor never looked somebody in the face and was like, you're just wrong. Like, I think they know that that's not how you teach people in the first place, and that's not how you treat people. So yeah, I've never seen that happen. I don't think it would happen.
So I know last year we asked you and discussed if we thought universities here in Ohio should petition against this bill and release statements, because at that time a handful of universities have, but Ohio University in itself hasn't. Since then, they have released a statement in conjunction with the IUC, and I guess my question is pretty much, what do you think about that statement that Ohio University released themselves?
Oh my gosh. I think it is the most passive statement I've ever seen in my entire life against a piece of legislation. It's a mere 5 tiny paragraphs, and not once does it say, we are against this bill.
Yeah.
That's the one thing it needs to say, and it doesn't say, it doesn't say it. Like, it just doesn't. It doesn't start with it. It doesn't end with it. It's not in the middle. It says, we submitted a letter on behalf of Ohio's public universities. The letter expressed our shared concerns about the bill and its potential negative impact on public universities' ability to support student success, maintain college affordability, and protect academic freedom. That's all it says. I think it needs to hold a lot more weight, the damage that it's going to do to students and faculty and the institutions itself. I feel like the statement does not reflect how heavy it will, how heavy the bill will impact Ohio University.
Because based on like last year's discussion that we had, certain universities did take a stance and oppose this bill entirely and then continue to inform their student body and faculty of what is going on with this bill. The only thing that Ohio University said at the very end of this is, moving forward, we will continue to work alongside our IUC peers and engage in further dialogue with members of the state legislature to appropriately address our shared concerns regarding Ohio Senate Bill 83. You're not directly stating any concern, and the letter itself with like the Inter-University Council is, again, broad, but to the extent that it kind of names that this is a dangerous bill, but not a direct stance of, hey, this ruins all of this stuff that we have. This challenges so many things, and this is going to bring about so many problems that we aren't ready for or are willing to enact.
Yeah, it's just kind of, it's wishy-washy. It's, I don't know. And I know institutions have to play kind of safe regarding the Ohio legislature, because that is where we get our funding as a state university, public university. That's where we get our money, so I get it. But I think like the damage that this bill will do to not only all universities in Ohio, which it will, but Ohio University, I feel like it deserves a little bit more than, we will continue to track the progress of SB 83 and share our concerns with the legislature. Like, we need to say, we oppose this bill, period.
I agree, but I don't think they will.
No, I don't think they will either. I don't think so.
Well, Haley, I want to thank you for being here and the great discussion that you brought along with this whole ordeal. And I know, maybe, hopefully, we never have to talk about this again, but if it goes further, we might have to bring it up, and I'd gladly have you back on the podcast.
I'd gladly be back. I love Athens Happens.
Well, Haley, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, I just want to add that ACLU OU meets on Tuesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. in Bentley 135, and we talk about things like SB 83 and the effects it'll have on students across campus, amongst a million and a half other things. So if you're interested in social justice, come check us out. We do have an Instagram, so make sure to follow us on there. It is aclu.ohiou.
And that's a wrap for this episode of Athens Happens. If you're interested in joining the New Political, come see us in the Radio Television Communications Building on Sundays from 7 to 8 p.m. Also, make sure to check out thenewpolitical.com for more podcast episodes and other content. Thank you, and until next time.